Welcome, everyone. I'm Tom Friedland. I'm the chair of the Westland Public Safety Advisory Board. We'll call this gathering to order. We have some additional people besides our members that have come into our discussion for tonight, which is going to center on a couple of issues. First, let's just introduce ourselves. I'm Tom Friedland. Who wants to go next year? Chris, why don't you?
Hi, I'm Chris Duncan. I'm a member of the Public Safety Advisory Board. I've been working with Judy on disaster preparedness. It's been one of my focus areas. And I'm also the scribe, so I'll be doing the best I can, double duty with both participating discussion as well as trying to write down all your comments.
Me next?
Charlie, why don't you go next?
Hey, I am Charlie Matthews. This is my first appearance for this board. I'm also on the Westland Planning Commission, and I've been resident here for about 20 years now. So anything I can do to help is, now that I'm retired, I have some time to do that. So it's
okay.
A pleasure working.
I'm just going across the top of my screen. That gives me Austin is next.
Hey there, I'm Austin, and I'm to the Public Safety Advisory Board. Just joined this recent year. I work as a nurse locally here at Thornbecker Children's Hospital, and excited to be here.
Okay, then I got Gregory Smith below you.
Hi, I'm here basically just to learn what you have to say about emergency preparedness. I had planned to have a meeting last year before COVID began with neighbors about this, so I figured it would be a kind of a good refresher just to see what kinds of issues you're bringing up.
All right. Jerry?
I'm Jerry Gavrilatos. I'm the city manager, and I think this is my first PSAB meeting, so thank you for having me. I'm excited about it.
Okay. Ben?
I'm muted. Hi, everybody. My name is Ben Verratti. I am not a member of the PSAB. I'm here as a community member. I've been living in Westland for about a year and a half. I'm something of a newcomer. I previously lived in New Orleans for just under a decade, where I worked primarily on disaster recovery, response, and mitigation, and also had the privilege to study disaster law at Tulane Law School and to complete an externship with the City of LA Office of Emergency Management. So I'm excited to hear more about what activities are going on in Westland, and have some proposals for some things we might consider.
Okay. Michael Carlson? We haven't heard from you yet.
Good evening. Michael Carlson, lived in Westland now for 3 years. Husband's an ER doc. We're super excited to be here. And I'm a division chief with Clackamas Fire.
And then we have Ryan Brinkley.
Yes. Hi. Thank you for having me. I'm just here as a citizen. I've been involved with some disaster preparedness through my office for years now. I've been in Westland now for it's going on 8 years, so just looking forward to seeing what we've got going on here. See if there are any volunteer opportunities that might come up.
Okay, Stefan.
Good evening, Stefan Myers, Public Affairs Officer with Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue, and I'm a representative for the fire district with the Public Safety Advisory Board.
I've got Bill. Don't have a last name for Bill. Bill's still in there. Or are you just joining audially? How about Bruce? Okay. Kim just popped in with a picture.
Hello, I am not on the advisory board. I'm on other advisory boards. Kim Bria, lived here locally for about 20 years and I have great interest in emergency preparedness and emergency management. So I'm really happy to be joining this conversation tonight. I'm really excited that the board's meeting again after an absence last year, and joining that conversation.
Guys keep moving around on my screen, but we've passed over Captain Mahuna. Would you step in, Peter, and just give a little brief intro?
Sure, I'm Peter Mahuna. I'm the acting chief for the Western Police Department and the liaison for the police department to the PSAB.
Okay. I've got a couple of names on here that they haven't answered up, but I don't have pictures to go with them. We'll just move forward. Just because we do have regular business to run through really quickly here, we need to do an approval of the agenda, which most of our members have had a chance to see, which is centering primarily on a special open forum topic. Are there any changes or additions to the agenda from any of the members? And if not, can we have a motion to approve?
I'll move to approve.
Is there a second?
And second. I'll second that.
All right. All in favor? Say by aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the agenda is approved. We have still pending the written version of the minutes from last month's meeting. As most of you saw in a message from Tony, the audio recording of that did not record properly. Have you all had a chance to review the minutes, or do you have any objections or changes or modifications to it, or do we have a motion to approve?
This is Tony. I was able to retrieve that from our IT department, and it is posted on the website underneath agendas and minutes.
We do have an audio version of last month's meeting as well. So any changes or corrections? Obviously, the audio did a very good job of catching everything we said. If not, I will entertain a motion to approve.
I can second that.
Who was our first motion? We've got a second, but we don't
have a first. I will first. I thought you were first.
Okay, second.
I'll second.
Okay, good. We've got a second on the motion. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Hearing none, the minutes are approved, which moves us to our topic of the evening, which is to have sort of an open forum on preparedness. This last year has been quite a challenge for all of us, and last month threw a monkey wrench into it to make matters even more constrained. The Public Safety Advisory Board is just that. We are an advisory panel to our public safety agencies for the city. We do not have a role in adjudicating complaints. We don't hear anything on specific policy. If there's any issue or complaint about that, we'll refer that to the city or to other committees involved in that. But we're focused primarily on two main topics on an ongoing basis. One that deals with teenage driving, which is currently on hold due to COVID. And our ongoing project has been with preparedness for emergencies or disasters. Our resident expert on our particular program is Chris Duncan, and she has been very eager in terms of taking an opportunity to discuss with all of you ways that you were able to survive and succeed in the incidents that occurred just a few weeks ago, what was sort of learned and what we can maybe look at and plan moving forward to better prepare or better deal with that situation should it repeat, or rather when it repeats itself, because these are all things that we know at some point are going to happen again in some form. So, Chris, do you want to take off on your lead?
Thank you. Well, first I want you to know that I don't consider myself an expert. I've had certainly considerable experience, one of the first being that at age 10, the Columbus Day storm, which some of you may recall, but some of you were too young, occurred, and we were one of the first houses on top of Merrillhurst Heights. So we were without power for nearly 2 weeks since we were at the very end of the grid. And getting up that hill was also a challenge. And at that time, the water tower was also up there. And with no power, there was no pump. So anyway, that was my introduction. And since that time, I lived most of my adult life in Alaska, which did a great deal of earthquake preparedness, because the memory of the 64 quake was still fresh in everyone's minds when at the time that I moved up there. And so I sort of stayed involved and gleaned a lot of the wisdom, and spending time with elder indigenous populations, you learn a lot about adaptation there too. So at any rate, it was just, I felt very pleased and privileged to be asked to join this group and see what we could do, because I've also had a career in community organizing and some public education, community schooling, or community education. And so it all seemed to kind of marry together. What we did, and I say we, because many of you, if you reached out to the Westland Ready, it will still have the name Judy on it in some cases. Judy Wickman is a PSA board member that has just recently retired, and she was our real gung-ho coordinator and mover shaker. And a lot of what we were doing at that time was focused on more on the community organizing format. And I'll talk about that a little bit more later, but what I really would like to do first, because it is fresh on everyone's minds, is to hear from all of you. It sounds like we have some pretty seasoned folks, but I know even I had aha moments during this last experience where here in Bolton, we were without power for 7 days. And I don't know about, depending on where the rest of you were, but first of all, I would really like to hear, kind of go around and hear what your experiences were. And I'm just gonna take some notes, and I would like to principally see, one, how you felt as far as your own household was in contending with the project, what you did. Two, I'd like to know how you interacted with neighbors to assist each other. Were you the one assisting others, or did somebody bring something to you that was really valuable? I'd like to hear about that. And then finally, in consideration of the limited resources that cities, especially one the size of West Lynn, have, was there something that you thought might have been done to have been a little more helpful, be it a way to get information out about the warming center that was developed a little later in the week, or just, you know, clearing roads? I don't know. The one thing we're not going to talk about is the performance of PGE, because that's out of our purview. So with that, I'd just, if we could just, I don't know if I should go down the list here and see if somebody would like to speak, I could do that. Or see if you're on video, hold your hand up. Kim. Kim, I see a hand, so
we'll get this emergency party started. To answer your question, how we did ourselves,
my first experience in a situation like this was I was 9 years old in Wisconsin, rural Wisconsin, and we had an ice storm. It was a very unusual event. And we were without power for 10 days, which I just matched. And we did not have running water. We had a, this sounds so old school, but we had to melt snow to flush the toilet with gravity. And we had quickly filled the bathtub with water before the power went out because we knew it was coming. But I wasn't afraid as a kid. And, you know, we had a Coleman camp stove and we, you know, we helped out the neighbors. We heated food for the neighbors, and the generator's priority in town was going to the dairy farmers because you can't let cows go without being milked. So in this particular situation, I'm finally justified in how I shop because some of my friends are like, why do you have so much food in your house all the time? You know, you don't have a big family. It's like, I don't know. This is just the way it's always been. So, I checked on my neighbors. I knew which neighbors to check on, but it was a challenge during the ice storm because it wasn't even safe to leave the house, you know, for a couple of days. It wasn't safe to walk to the mailbox. There was no mail to come anyway. I didn't have cell phone service for a day and a half. And so that became very precious, you know, turning the phone off. So communications, I knew I was on my own. And then when it was, when it warmed up enough, I went down the street with a neighbor and we took hot water bottles in my little red wagon just to see if people had needed hot water. And a couple of people said, yeah, I could use some tea. I want to feed my hummingbirds. I want to wash my face. Most people were okay. And that was a big relief to me that they had neighbors that were checking on them. Coming back to the city and the city resources, I know the city was working. They did a great job on the doing part. But communications is very entertaining when I'm glad you put it on social media or website, but we don't have a way of looking at it. And I'm not going to waste my battery trying to find something. So I think the part that's really missing that Map Your Neighborhood speaks to is the citizen connection. Because we've got a lot of wealth of experience in West Lynn and in our rural neighbors. So that's what would have made a big difference is that, you know, if a handful of people would have had that city support connection, we can take care of ourselves, but that's a huge gap.
Thank you, Kim. Tracy, I see you just joined us too. Welcome. Would you like to speak and share your experience over the ice storm?
It was interesting, to say the least. I live across from Marius Young, so just hearing all of the trees cracking and the trees falling down and just trying to clear 43. Thank goodness we had so many amazing men who had these power saws that were out there. And it's like as soon as one car saw someone out, then everyone just kind of jumped in to try to keep 43 clear. But it was really scary. It was very daunting. Not knowing just exactly where it is that, like having a point place to be able to go to feel safe. And then, you know, I mean, no one really has communication to communicate, you know, unless you're really close to a neighbor and able to knock on a door, and help pool resources together. But yeah, we were out for the whole 7 days. So we had some amazing neighbors that, like I said, we pulled all of our resources together as much as we possibly could and until those resources started to run low and run out. And I have family in Portland, so it was, you know, a risks and a benefits thing. Probably should have stayed in West Lynn instead of going to Portland, but, you know, I was warm for a little bit and that all worked itself out. But yeah, I think just being able to figure out where we can go, and what resources we will be able to use in case another different type of emergency disaster situation occurs. Because it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when at the end of the day. Yeah.
Charlie was flagging us there just before Tracy started.
Great. And thank you, Tracy. Okay. Charlie.
You know, it's something as simple, quite frankly, as a checklist would have been helpful for me. Let me give you two of my dumb things just to up front. First of all, almost 5 days without power. Stayed here a couple of days. We had gas fireplaces and gas cooktop, but went up to Portland to stay with our daughter for a couple of days and neglected to take the ice out of the ice maker in the refrigerator door. And of course it melted and went down on the oak floor and has kerfed the oak floors, which run throughout downstairs of the house. Just something to have reminded me, take the ice out of your ice maker dummy before you leave with no power on. I left the deadbolt on the garage door locked. And then when the power came on, of course, I ran over to test the garage door, and there was a little incident there that was surprising. But anyway, I don't know. It sounds simple, but had I had something stuck away in the back of the box that said, if you lose power for a prolonged period of time, don't light your generator in your garage. Don't do the things that some people have done, you know, causing their own demise. And do think about doing these following things. So that's the only thing that comes to mind right off.
Very helpful. Greg, take your mute off.
So on Saturday after the ice storm, I learned that my mother's power had gone out in the retirement home that she lives in over on River Road. And I really became concerned about what she was going to do in the dark. She's 95. So I ended up walking over to River Road, which was not the safest thing to do because ice was falling off the lines and trees were falling. So it was an adventure. I told my wife leaving it felt like a little bit like a Little House on the Prairie. But I succeeded in getting over there, and her building actually, though the power went off, it remained pretty warm actually during the entire time. I think the power was off for 5 days there. It was 9 days at our house down by Willamette Park. But I think one of the things that really surprised me was that there was no backup generator at this retirement facility. And my sense is that there does not seem to be any kind of regulation with regard to that. And fortunately, I think everybody did okay there, but it is of concern that places where retired people live do not have power. The other thing that came up was that, as people already mentioned, I wasn't able to communicate with my wife. Sometimes I was, sometimes I wasn't. But on Sunday, I hadn't been able to establish any contact with her for about over 24 hours. And I became concerned. And in the evening, I decided I wanted to see if I could get back home. And there was no way to get here. So I ended up calling the police just to see, or 911, just to see whether there was a way for me to get back to West Lynn, just to check on my wife. We've got chickens, and I was afraid, you know, a branch might have fallen her, and you know, who knows what would have happened. But 911 connected me with the West Lynn police, who then did a wellness check. And so they were able to use their cell phone and communicate back to me. But I think the absence of being able to use the cell phone was really a serious kind of issue. And it made me wonder whether there's some way to make sure that cell phone towers have backup generators as well, just so that whole process can continue working. I don't know enough about the technology to be able to determine whether that is a possibility or not. But but I think that was a real concern. The last thing I'd like to mention is that in our neighborhood, one of our neighbors, Kenny Bichek, his family's an old timer. They've been here for over 100 years in West Lynn. But Kenny had a large generator that he was taking from house to house so that people could kind of recharge their freezers and refrigerators so that they wouldn't lose all their frozen goods. And that was an incredible blessing. And then he polled all of his relatives to see how many small generators they could find, and then ended up distributing generators to almost everybody in the neighborhood. So it was like a really kind of wonderful action on his part to really take care of the neighbors. So just wanted to mention that as a kind of an organizing thing that really had real benefits. So that's enough from me.
Well, thank you. That's quite the story there, I must say, covering all different systems.
Yes, right.
Do we have any other speakers? Oh, Ben.
Sure. Thank you all for including me tonight. Like Chris and Kim, I also have some significant background in past disasters personally. I grew up in upstate New York, where catastrophic snowstorms were fairly commonplace, and my family's economic situation was such that sometimes we would be without heat for extended periods of time as a result. I was living in DC during the September 11th attacks, and as I mentioned before, I spent a long time working in New Orleans on hurricane relief issues and also representing clients who were victims of the BP oil spill. So I've never like thought of myself as a prepper, but was sort of pleasantly surprised to find that we personally had good food stores in the house, had flashlights, hurricane lanterns. By coincidence, we recently installed a gas fireplace that kept our home pretty warm. But as a newcomer to the Pacific Northwest, didn't have a chainsaw, and a huge tree fell across our driveway and blocked any access, emergency access. I was actually warming up my car hoping to go somewhere when the tree fell. And a neighbor sort of vaulted across the street to immediately offer to both to help clear that tree and also another tree on our property that was threatening another neighbor. And I was so appreciative of that. And later on, when one of our neighbors chose to evacuate, we kept them updated about the status of their house and also the status of power. Like Chris, we were out of electricity for about a week. And then finally, when fortunately we have a four-wheel drive vehicle and we're able to get to a portion of Portland where we could charge phones, we were able to extend the offer to, you know, at least charge mobile devices for folks who we knew in the area, which was, you know, some small service. But, you know, as Kim said, I think it was quite difficult to learn what resources were available from the city. And Facebook, in my mind, is not the best primary way to deliver that information. Some of it also seems like there's not perfect coordination in terms of how that happens. For example, today there was an announcement that the area, the Dillo area below 43, they were going to begin clearing. I live in that area and we already had our first pass, so I don't really know how that information is getting coordinated for delivery, but it seems like that could perhaps go a little bit smoother. And, you know, to Charlie's point and Greg's point about accessing information and accessing resources, that's really what inspired me to be here at this meeting today. I think there are some ways that we as community members can really work together to strengthen our own neighborhoods and our own city. I know, Chris, you spoke about that from a community organizing standpoint, which I think is so important. I personally think and that framework can really help us not only feel empowered when it comes to disaster mitigation, but also be more effective in working with other potential partners like faith-based communities to establish warming centers, like food distributors in the area who may be able to do that. And one of the reasons that's important to me is that I've seen as a disaster worker that the communities that are least affected or that are demonstrating resilience are the ones that from a policy level get the most resources when those become available at a state and federal level. So it's not just about like, okay, let's get our community working together because that's a good thing to do. It's also one of our best chances for survival during the next disaster. So, I mean, frankly, I could talk about this for a long time, but I think in terms of some of the challenges that we've already been talking about information delivery and coordinating together, there are opportunities already in place to be coordinating that. And what I'd personally like to see is the CERT program requires a formal sponsor. And I'd hope that this board would consider recommending to city leadership that the city itself become that sponsor, thereby endorsing the program, giving it a bit of a broader platform, and facilitating that coordination with other response entities.
Yeah, we have, that has been something we've had some discussions on over time. Stefan, would you like to share some of the your observations working with CERT teams? You shared that at our last meeting too when we discussed.
I mean, just the in our experience, the strongest CERT programs are backed by somebody that's a point person and lead for helping them stay engaged throughout the year. The times when it's less successful is when it's kind of we get together once a year and there's not kind of that ongoing training and connection. So that's just one of the important pieces is that, you know, it's a program that requires some investment and leadership.
We've discussed CERT at various times in the Safety Advisory Board over the last decade. And I'm not saying it's something that we are not considering, but at the time the concept of doing something came about, the direction the board went in, which is before I came on it, was to use the Map Your Neighborhood program on the premise that it would empower individual areas in the community to be self-sufficient rather than have to wait for someone to come into the area to assist them. But there's nothing that says that there can't be two similar or two programs that have similar goals. It just is the idea of coordinating it and having the personnel that are willing to support each aspect of that on their own, which you're bringing up a strong interest in it. And a good background. I don't know what commitment you're looking at and what we need to do to go further on that. But I don't see it as a negative. It certainly is something that the city can look at and consider. And that's certainly a recommendation we can make after we, you know, discuss it as the board itself, as opposed to just the open forum, getting information about how best to deal with you know, the potential for disasters or things that just simply immobilize the community. I fortunately or unfortunately, the first 2 days of the storm, I was out of town. We were up in Washington State and driving back here on Saturday night. It was treacherous to no end once we got near the Washington border. And then the neighborhoods were just black. Pulled up to the driveway, there's a tree on the roof of our garage. House is dark, the neighborhood's dark. We fired up the fireplace as soon as we got in. We were freezing, even with that. Our cats were all okay. They seemed to be comfortable with the temperature. And by the following morning, we had decided the Marriott sounded like a much better place to stay. So we abandoned the house and made regular trips to check on the animals. A friend loaned us the guest room at their place. And so by the time we got here, the power had been out a week. Fortunately, I guess on one hand, by the time the power came back on, the stuff in the freezer had refrozen. So anything that was rotted and smelling was frozen, so that kept the smell in until we could dispose of it. And there wasn't that much that was to go bad in the refrigerator side. The tree's finally off the roof, and we're still waiting on estimates on repair to the roof. So missed most of it. I think one of the things that triggered us to abandon staying is, while I did have some stuff prepared, some of it I couldn't get to. Some I couldn't remember where I put it. I remember putting it in easy to access places in the garage, but getting access to the garage was the big problem. And I was just a few weeks out from having back surgery, so my mobility was not the best in the world. And escaping to a little more comfortable area seemed to be a better choice at that point in time. But there have to be some better ways that information can be shared with the community on what resources are available. Some of these things we've discussed with the board over the years. Some might require a little bit more work than others, but we're not starting from ground zero. We've got a little bit of a head start, but there are definitely some places that are far beyond where we are in that preparedness mode. Chris, anything else you want to throw in?
I actually, excuse me, I just wanted to say, have we looked into anything has the board looked into anything like Everbridge or one of those type of services for these communication issues? There are several of them out there that give you multiple channels for reaching out. And no, we've got the fast alert system for the schools at this point, but not sure what other
things might be out there. Educate me a little bit. I'm not familiar with the Everbridge term. I may be familiar with the technology, but what exactly is that?
It's a database that citizens can sign up with, or any organization. Some companies use it to keep in touch with their people whenever there are emergencies that happen. And it's a uses the cell phones to see where you are in that situation. But if the cell phone's not available, whenever an emergency happens, it also sends out, you have the option to have it be able to send text messages or call a landline. Or send emails or all three to get those messages out. So
I'm almost inclined to say we need to go with something a little lower technology.
Well,
there are some city good example that has a very extensive website for their emergency preparedness is the city of Irvine in California.
Okay.
I'm familiar with it because my brother was involved with their police department for a few decades. But one of the things that they have is a low power AM radio station that comes on in the event of a disaster that would give updates or information, much like the traffic warning signs that ODOT has or WashDOT has when you're going into an area where there might be an adverse condition, that it's very low power, but enough where it would reach within a few miles without too much trouble. The challenge would be for somebody to update the information on that. And I don't know what restrictions there would be with the FCC as far as licensing and power outputs that would be involved in that. But that's something that we discussed a couple of years ago, but have never really followed up on. But I think given what a lot of people are talking about, looking for resources, something like that, where it's low tech enough that just about anybody who's got an operational battery system can probably listen and get information, even if you have to go out to your car to do it.
You just need to remind people that they need to still keep those things around. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. I know. I think I can put my hands on an AM radio in my house, but
You have to look at maybe into the FM band, which is something that a lot of the cell phones are able to use as an app more so than AM.
Certainly.
But it's something I don't think we've researched or done anything else with, but it would be a very low-tech means of getting that information out. And then it just has to be publicized to the community that's an option that's there.
Ben, did you want to add to the conversation there?
I did just real briefly. I've personally built low power FM stations. The FCC requirement is a wattage requirement, which is actually fairly low in terms, and it's the same for AM. It's slightly different calculation. The benefit to AM is that you don't have to be line of sight with FM. The way that our area is structured, it would be difficult to get the kind of coverage that we need without repeaters. But if that's something that anybody wants to talk more about, I'd be more than happy to do that. I have a fair bit of experience in that area.
Great, great. Okay. Is there anyone that wanted to speak, still sharing their experiences before I move on? Okay, I'm not hearing or seeing. So I just wanted to share with you kind of the direction, and this is just, you know, again, we're regrouping from Judy's departure, the most recent event that we're dealing with, and some wonderful new energy on the board. We have not been operating as a fully filled board for some time. And so in thinking about how we could move forward, one of the things that seemed apparent from the efforts of Grant Oakes before Judy and Judy since, with regard to the old Map Your Neighborhood project, was that it was just very difficult before COVID to try to organize neighborhood meetings, to find the host, get people to come, and get to that level of organization. So we thought, well, how can we help our neighbors do better? And so I put together kind of a quick little PowerPoint, which I'm going to share here. This is, can you still hear me?
We can hear you. I don't see it sharing, but that might be. Okay.
No. But can you see now can you now see the PowerPoint?
No.
Okay.
No, if I'm not familiar with WebEx, if it's similar to.
We did a run on this one time before. Let me look at this. Let me see if this will work. Does that show?
Yay.
Okay. All right. So anyway, this is something that I'll be taking around. In fact, I'll be presenting this to the Rosemont Neighborhood Association in about another week or so. And what the concept is to, one, we don't have to, because we already know that West Lynn is a great place to live, but what about? Because we already have seen the effects of windstorms. Now we have something to look forward, I mean, not look forward to, but to be concerned with. And that's one of the things that the board sort of shifts its focus and discussion on sometimes in the spring and summer, is the wildfire danger. In so many, we have so many green areas with downed trees that are not getting cleaned out. In addition, we know that the big one is coming. We know that mudslides are another issue. And my sister was impacted by a mudslide that took out 10 of the 40 units when the 7-point earthquake hit in Anchorage not long ago. So hers was not one of them. But anyway, we have a lot to think about. And so just looking at all the different, and we covered it already today, what some of those challenges were as far as electricity, heating and cooking fuel, safe drinking water, and even how to get in or out or bring goods in or out of the community. So these are all issues that we're going to be facing. And one of the things that I've really tried to emphasize, even in the old program, is I've tried to get away from the discussion of emergency preparedness and focus more on disaster preparedness, because 911 is for emergencies. That's how I see it more, because a disaster, even the 911 folks are impacted oftentimes by what we're contending with. And so the emphasis is more on how to go it alone for at least 72 hours, possibly longer, hopefully shorter, and that we're trying to strike now while the iron is hot, because I was on this board when the last ice storm hit in 2017, and how soon we forget. Even my husband and I, from having generator drills, so we could do it in the dark. So anyway, our new approach, and that's why I'm so excited at the caliber of folks that we have going here, because the old was a model that was taken from the Loma Prieta earthquake type experience that was developed. And it was called Map Your Neighborhood, which was always a little bit misleading or confusing, because the emphasis was on identifying your area that of your self-help group, you know, within 10 to 15. We had to find someone who would be a group leader, a host, somebody who'd sort of be in charge of that group once they have identified themselves. And even though our goal was West Lynn to be covered by these groups, they turned out to be little isolated islands, and with a lot of unprepared people in between. And also what was happening within was a lot of people moving in and out of the neighborhood. And so we began to get requests for refresher groups, because there had been enough turnover in a neighborhood to where all the little exchange, the workbooks with names and numbers and who's got what, the chainsaws were no longer relevant. So what we've really done is kind of gone along the lines the focus is now on, just like our Gmail account, our email account, to be West Lynn ready. And the focus will now be more on individual household consultation. What we'd like to see is to put together a call list of people that have kind of been through it before, have a little more equipment, were maybe the ones who were the most helpful to their neighbors through this last time, or people like you, Ben, that have gone all the way to formal cert training, to be on call, to go out and do these individual consults with folks, because even in a COVID environment, we don't have to worry about meeting space. It could be a one-on-one meeting in a driveway to talk about their experience. We'll have a kind of a standardized packet and a checklist for folks to hand out when they do these visits, but kind of assess them on a more, you know, individual basis of to what extent are you ready? And here's how to get to the next level, perhaps, you know, and things along this line. So it's still with a lot of self-help group flexibility. If a couple of people want to come because, hey, these three neighbors did really well this last time and we'd like to get a little better prepared or consult, fine. It's expandable, but it doesn't require this critical mass right from the get-go. That was our problem before. And we, you know, I kind of think we have a better potential for more widespread coverage of a prepared West Lynn by doing this more individualized approach. So basically at the end, as I make these presentations to a neighborhood association or what have you, to get going, whether you want to be one of those, get on the consult list by sharing your name, your own contact, you know, we'll have, you know, I will serve as the coordinator, the dispatcher, so to speak. That's the role that Judy kind of had when she would dispatch us to do neighborhood trainings. And also your area, so that you don't have to travel as far if and leave home as broadly if you don't want to, if you just want to serve some of those in your immediate kind of neighborhood or adjacent neighborhood areas, you know, that's fine too. But anyway, we hope to build a cadre and that this will be a place people can go to say, hey, I'd like somebody to come out and see what I've got. What am I missing in my kit? Things like that. So kind of a more simplistic, but I hope will become a more effective approach. So hopefully by hitting stop sharing, we get back to the group. So what do you think of this concept, folks?
I think it's got some better potential from the standpoint of not having to meet a certain threshold to present it. We've learned with COVID that these remote type of interactions are feasible, doable, and could reach, you know, a larger group in a shorter period of time with a lot less hassle. So, you know, it certainly has some legs to start with.
Ben?
Yeah, I have some questions about this. I mean, it seems to me that, you know, if the problem with Map My Neighborhood or with CERT or whatever has to do with a reliable hierarchy, there are ways to reduce hierarchy within those programs, which is not to denigrate this. What I'm trying to understand is this individual consulting on how a specific household can increase its resiliency, or is this individual consulting on how individuals can be working towards building more resilient neighborhoods? I'm just trying to understand the situation of a person who says, well, I'm really worried about the earthquake, but I'm already living hand to mouth. I'm on food stamps. I'll have time to volunteer, obviously, if my employer crumbles into the dust, but what am I supposed to do?
Yeah, the emphasis has shifted more to first looking at how the individual can be as prepared as possible at this point.
Well, my concern with that is where it leaves lower resource individuals. And I think, you know, what I've seen is that there are many people in disaster in the same way that, you know, these triage models focus on assisting communities that are best prepared and that have already taken the best mitigation actions. You know, some of us, even just in the ice storm, have experienced that it's all well and good to have a perfectly warm house and lots of food, but, you know, if your neighbors are suffering, or if you can't get on the streets anywhere because, you know, there's nobody available to clear them, you know, what are we supposed to do with that? So, I think the model of individualized resource sharing makes a lot of sense, but I'm deeply concerned about what this means for everybody who can't go out and buy a generator and a chainsaw and, you know, all of that.
Well, and that's absolutely right, you know, that there will be those that cannot. And so, but what I'm hopeful is that there will be, you know, more people that might have the ability to share resources with those who are not, because we do have quite a number of low resourced elderly, single, you know, folks. I had possibly, let's see, at the height of it, 4 widows that I was assisting that could not afford to go to motels. So I certainly, you know, understand and want to build a system whereby they are very much assisted as well. Given our past experience at working with a model that we inherited through this group, you know, I'm just looking at a little bit of a paradigm shift, and all the time still the board working with our city partners to make what was developed perhaps a little more accessible earlier and overcome the barriers toward utilizing those resources, maybe making them a little more dispersed in the community rather than at one community center. There was a generator right over at the library. Could that have been better utilized for services? You know, those are things that we can look at systemically, but this particular effort is looking more at just how we can build a larger cadre of prepared households.
Yes, Greg.
Yeah. Great.
I think everything that I've read about community resilience and that kind of preparedness suggests that communities where neighbors know one another and help one another, all, you know, prior to the emergency, tend to do much better as well. And I think it was one of the things that I found positive about the Map Your Neighborhood, even though we didn't actually get to it. But what did happen was that I had actually contacted many of our neighbors in preparation for that meeting. That didn't happen because of COVID, but we'd already established those lines of communication. And so we had like relationships built that I would hate to see lost. And so I'm just kind of wondering, in addition to the focus on the individual that you're talking about, whether there are other things that could be done to encourage neighbors to really begin to get to know one another, just because it's a good thing to do, but also in terms of preparation, and rather than kind of going to a kind of a survivalist individualist mode, to really see our safety and welfare being tied into our ability to help one another.
Absolutely. One isn't just totally replacing the other. It's just to be able to have another more flexible menu to offer, mm-hmm. so that we can get the ball moved down, you know, further, even in the face of our pandemic challenges. You bet.
I think with Chris's approach to some of the neighborhood associations, by that nature, it's working to the neighborhoods, and you might get one or two people out of the neighborhood association asking for it, but at the same time, you could certainly have them reach out to the neighbors and nearby as well. Our neighbor who also escaped for the storm about the same time we did, we had enough to say hi in the driveway, but we've since exchanged business cards and contact information just for that specific purpose, should there be another problem, and share information back and forth. It's the sort of thing that does lend itself to interaction within the neighborhood. I don't see what Chris is describing as being an individualist type approach, but it is, I think, modifying what we had been stuck with, and I don't want to even say stuck with, what we had been using as a framework before that doesn't necessarily fit well in the current environment where we're still social distancing, avoiding contacts with those we don't know, at least where we might be able to hold her individual meetings, but maybe with a group of 3 or 4 people in close proximity. And that still doesn't preclude the idea of developing an ancillary type, separate response type CERT program, assuming that we can get the forces to be that would, have that ongoing enthusiasm to keep it viable with appropriate support from one of the public safety entities. And Stefan was clear in last month's meeting that the most, as he said tonight, the most successful ones have that good involvement and interaction from one of the sponsoring public safety entities, whether it be police or fire, that there needs to be some good interaction with that in order to keep that structure in place and maintain currency for those that are involved in the program.
Any other questions, comments, before I turn it back over to the chair? Oh, Kim.
I had just recently watched a webinar on disaster preparedness for people with disabilities, and it was an eye-opener for me, not on the content, but on just what people are going through in these circumstances. 10 days without power, even though I did it as a kid, got my attention again, and people who are blind, deaf, developmentally disabled, where they've got their instructions on the refrigerator and the bag by the door. It's like, who's, how many people do we have that didn't have electricity for CPAP machines or oxygen? I learned that they may be able to have funding available to them. for emergency backup. It'd be great to consider an emergency operations manager for the city in some capacity, because this impacts all of our departments. And if you look at this last year, we are still in a state of emergency. I mean, this wasn't just an ice storm. This was an ice storm that you can't go hang out at your neighbor's house. When I was a kid, we brought the neighbors over, warm up and cook something. You can't do that right now. You know, so it's like there's not some place to go. So we're in a prolonged state of emergency. We've had various city and first responder resources diverted to that. I know some other cities have people out at the airport right now doing shots, so they're not in a public works department. So I think it's, how do we leverage this right now? Because, you know, we're already into April. The wildfires, the only reason our homes are still here is because the winds changed. So how can we, what's the simplest thing we can do right now and scale it as a community so that people at least, you know, can get through 24 hours and have Trader Joe's peanut butter filled pretzels on hand so you don't get sad after you have no way of cooking your food for a couple days. You know, so how do we do this scalable with programs that already exist and look at the overarching view of our city, because we've got 26,000 people here, you know, versus how many staff we have. So in that 26,000 people, there's a lot of experience that can make this reach farther.
Yeah, hence kind of the idea of the each one teach one.
Well, I mean, there are things that can be done on the short term, which is what we're looking at with what we already have on hand. There are some longer term plans, much like Ben, there you moved. You were up here in the right hand corner. Ben was talking about with a CERT program, which is going to take a little more than a day or two to put into operation. I certainly would like to invite Ben to, you know, bring back ideas in subsequent meetings. I'm not sure if we have an opening on the board at the moment. If so, you know, certainly apply to fill any openings we have with that. We also need to see what resources that we have available from our respective agencies, from the city itself, from the PD, from the fire department, to even administer some of these types of programs that may require some funding or coordination, or at least the designation of some individual as a point of contact. It's not anything we're going to be able to solve in one meeting. It certainly gives us a lot of food for thought as to what to do, where to go, and reconvene next month and see if there's some additional ideas or options we can work with at that point. That is one question I do have. Our city council liaison, Rory, is unavailable at least for this term on Tuesdays and Thursdays. He has a class at 5:30, which makes it difficult for him to come to a Tuesday meeting, which is what we had hoped to accomplish with this. Tentatively, I have on the agenda our next meeting being the third Wednesday of April, but that's not wedded into anything. If there's some better ideas as to time and place to avoid conflicts with any other schedules, that's fine. And if it means that our city council liaison cannot make a meeting because of that, so be it. But that's another item for consideration as we get close to the end of our discussion today.
Well, no answer. Tom, before we move into that, I wanted to just see, because I think part of this meeting, in addition to kind of like presenting, you know, our thoughts and ideas for disaster preparedness, was to also just, you know, leverage people's interest at this time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sort of stir up in people that are in, that are interested. And is, I know there was an email, Chris, that you put on that slideshow. Is that the best way, like, you know, for people that are interested in helping, like, you know, facilitate or at least like, you know, trying to get a meeting for themselves and their neighbors of some sort of program that we have, or doing some more beyond that, like, you know, trying to help facilitate a CERT program, how can they do that? What's the best way for them to contact? Should they just send an email to that or let them know of their interest? Or, you know, I'd hate to miss out on people's interest right now.
You're muted, Chris.
Yeah, that has been sort of the go-to spot for requesting information on the disaster preparedness focus of our activities. And so I checked that probably every other day. It was really interesting. Right after the storm, there were like 15 messages. And maybe I'll go 5 days before something will maybe pop up. So
the email is on the city's website under the police department under Map Your Neighborhood, which gets you to that email. I will be the first to admit that the city's website is a very big challenge to navigate. I was aware that this meeting was scheduled for today because I set the date up, and I'd gotten an email from Tony saying that, you know, here's the link to everything. But when I went to the website itself to try and find the notice and information on it, it took me about 15 minutes of searching. I eventually typed into the search function preparedness, and that was about the third entry that came back on the search on the city's website. So it's not an easy navigation to get information on as it stands right now. And that's something I talked to Rory about with the city council, and he's going to talk to IT, and we'll see what can be done to change or improve that. But that email is probably, for the moment, the best source for anybody who wants information on the city's efforts at community preparedness for incidents like we're discussing, which could be considered a disaster, could be considered an emergency, could be, you know, whatever you want to call it. Those situations that leave us challenged and having to contend with a lot of issues on our own without the support from normal first responder services.
Okay, great.
So for the members of the board itself, is there any problem? Let's do it this way. Any problem with doing a meeting on Wednesday, April 21 at 6 p.m.? And that also includes our representatives from our agencies. Peter or Stefan, if Wednesday's a bad day, let us know on that too.
Tom, I have planning commission hearings the first and third Wednesday of every month.
Okay, so
this is Tony. On the website, it talks about it being the fourth Wednesday of every month. And so, I mean, if that's something you want to change, then I just need to know. Thanks.
We talked about changing it when we met last time because of some problems with any of the dates, and that's why I think we kind of shot for it being not on a Wednesday. I don't know what works best. Again, this goes back to our membership on the board. What's going to work best? It sounds like the third Wednesday is not a good choice. Is the fourth Wednesday a better choice?
I can.
Peter, does that present a problem for you with any of your other city demands?
No.
Okay.
It's not.
Stefan, how about you?
It does not.
Okay. Any of our other members of the board? Michael, Tracy, Austin, Charles?
That works for me.
Okay. Chris, any problem with that?
No. Are you saying the 28th now?
I guess the 28th, that's the fourth Wednesday.
Fourth. Yeah, no, that works fine for me.
Let me just take a quick look at my calendar before I commit to this. Well, the only thing I have on there is the Westland Public Safety meeting. I guess it was the fourth Wednesday. Okay. If that's works out for everybody, we will shoot for that as our next date. Is there anything left, shall we say, under the good of the order? Last comments, ideas, thoughts? Ben, I really like some of the things that you are bringing forth as to what we can implement that you've got some strong background in. I just don't know in terms of what the city is set up to allow us to do. I would really like to see something in the way of, you know, an AM system for updates on emergencies. I'd love to be able to say we could put something together in terms of CERT. I would encourage you to come back next month and maybe we'll have some more ideas as to how that can be implemented and who would oversee such a program within city agencies. And again, if we have an opening, I'm not sure where we are on our membership. We should have 7. I've got 6 here. But if there is an opening, any of you that have not applied for, please throw an interest into the city council. If there's nothing further, is there a motion to adjourn for the evening?
I did see Ben raise his hand. I don't know if he wanted to say something before.
I did just thank you so much for your comments. And, you know, I'm sure whatever can be moved forward should be. There's never going to be a moment in Westland history where community members are as aware of the need for disaster preparedness as this one. So in light of that, and respecting that y'all meet once a month, what is it that we as community members can do to best support the existing disaster preparedness efforts within that community? Whether that's is that promoting Westland Ready? Is that having some other kind of conversation? It just seems like there's this catalyzing moment that's just happened, and I'd hate to see momentum be lost as we're planning bigger things.
Which is exactly why we had our meeting as early as we did following the ice storm in our last meeting. Just about everything you said. To those that you know of that are interested, fire off an email to Chris on Westland Ready.
Help me build that roster. Yeah, help me build that roster so we can respond to requests as soon as possible.
The other thing in terms of a CERT program, I think at least the board itself needs to have a discussion with our city leaders as to what is available from them to oversee that. But certainly looking at where the volunteer interest is and the cadre of people that could be retained to partake in that is certainly something that could be started and maybe merge the two as we get more information over the next couple of weeks. I don't want to lose the momentum that we are having. One of the things that we had discussed last year before we were shut down by COVID was to have more frequent meetings of smaller components of the Public Safety Board, in that we would have a committee centered on our preparedness component, and another one would center on our teen driving program, and that they would meet more frequently, or and then report back to the bigger concept to the board itself. Chris, I don't know if you want to try and have any other informal meetings between now and April to follow up on this. I don't know.
Yeah, again, we've got kind of the COVID challenge, the
well, it'd still be a WebEx.
A WebEx, right. The other thing that we talked about too was a smaller group to work on the fire prevention as well, the wildfire, which again was another event that occurred during our hiatus. So, but anyway, those are some areas that we're still in the process of regrouping and figuring out how this is going to go forward with between vaccinations, variants, and whatever may fall.
As we spoke the other day, that you know the adrenaline is seemed to be wearing off to some degree. I don't know if maybe you want to try and have a separate little meeting, maybe get a few people, maybe get Ben involved in some follow-up on that before our meeting in April. But that's up to you, and just let me know what you need.
Yeah, I mean, let's have some, you know, give me your contact information via the Gmail account, and we'll get some dialogue going and see what we can pull off within the context of our other everyday lives. We are volunteers.
Yeah. And, well, we don't have a zillion other things to do.
And I'm also getting together with Tony to go through the myriad of stuff that Judy had, you know, so that we could separate, okay, this is for more the community group stuff. This is really good for handing out for our individual household assistance or small group assistance. So anyway, that's another thing that we're looking to try to get done ASAP.
So if nothing else, if there's interest of anybody here looking in or hearing more about anything that comes up for a meeting between now and our next formal meeting of the safety board, send off an email to Westland Ready
and @gmail.com.
Chris will follow up on that. Again, is there a motion to adjourn? Not that I want to get out of here, but we usually try and get this to about an hour, and we're missing Jeopardy.
I move we adjourn.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
All right. Any opposition? Hearing none, we will adjourn at 7:18 p.m. and we'll regroup in a little over a month, at least as far as the Public Safety Board. Thank you all. I appreciate it.
Thank you all.
And we will be in touch.